Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, it is a Friday, which means we're getting into the economics news of the week. One of the things that we've heard the experts and the economists complaining about over the last couple of weeks in conversation is just some of the lack of economic data that's been out there, but slowly but surely there are releases that are coming out, and this week there were some key data points that were coming out, issues of purchasing managers indexes, some consumer confidence numbers that were coming out. So to sort of help us to unpack where the South African economy is, we are joined by Dr. Christie Viljoen, who is an economist at PwC, and he's just going to be helping us to see where South Africa's economy is standing. Dr. Christie, how are you today?
I'm doing just fine from a cold and wet Cape Town. Thanks for the opportunity to join you.
No. Thank you for joining us. You know, despite the cold in Cape Town, we appreciate you braving that cold to to explain to us some of these things. So I think a good place for us to start is that PMI. I understand that there's been a PMI that's actually come out, and it's not only. I'm understanding this is for the continent?
Well, we've got some PMIs for a couple of African countries. Now, just to give the context, a PMI is an index that's based on a survey of purchasing managers in private sector companies. So these are the people that are on the front line that make decisions on buying goods and services. So they know where their companies are going, what their companies are doing, what they are planning. So they are almost the first step in knowing where economic activity is going. And we've seen over the past week, PMIs for the whole world. We've got about 50 countries in the world that have PMIs being released. We've got them for 80 African countries as well. Now, the reason why these PMIs are so interesting to look at these days is exactly the point you made about a slowdown in economic data. Not only in South Africa, but the worldwide, we've seen statistics agencies taking a bit longer to get their data published because, I mean, we are in lockdown. We can all understand that. But the PMI surveys have been coming out regularly, and they give us an early, quick indication about what's happening in the economy. So in the case of South Africa, our PMI for last month was released just a week ago. So we very quickly can see what's happening in June, early in July already, when the rest of June's economic data takes a month or two or three to be released. And in the case of South Africa, where we had a really negative impact on economic activity in March and April, a little bit of improvement in May, the June PMI number is telling us businesses are opening up, people are spending again, people are getting back to their jobs. Certainly not where we were in January and February before all of this situation hit us, but it is a bit of good news for South Africa. On the continent more broadly, the PMIs have also been picking up, and it almost looks like we're back to a level of about February. So just before the worst of this pandemic started hitting the global and the African economy, we're back to sort of that level again. Certainly not where we were at the end of last year when things were going a lot better, but these PMIs are telling us that the worst of this economic downturn was mostly in April, a little bit in May, and we're picking up our heads in June. And that's a little bit of good news, I think, for a really struggling South African economy.
Now, on this show, we actually try, where we can to look at the broader African economy, particularly some of those hotspots like the East African, West African regions. So can you just sort of give us a flavor of what things are looking like on the continent, and perhaps how is South Africa stacking up?
Yes, the African continent is obviously part of this globalized economy, and it can't get away from the situation where its biggest trading partners are facing big recessions this year. The latest forecast from the IMF sees the sub-Saharan African economy shrinking by about 3.5% this year. That's the worst performance that we've seen in a few decades. But it's better than the global economy in general. world economy will probably shrink by about 5% this year. That's the number we have at the moment. And some of the big developed economies could see an even bigger negative impact because of the disruption to the abnormal flow of business and trade and consumer spending. So the African economy is actually on a little bit of a better footing in terms of where the economy is going. One of the reasons would be that pandemic and infection levels in Africa is low at this stage. And that's due to several factors, one of them being that the African economy is less integrated into the rest of the world in terms of trade and travel, that kind of thing. But putting aside that little bit of good news, we're still going to see that most African economies will see a recession this year. That's unfortunately the nature of what's going on in the world at the moment. Again, it'll probably be smaller recessions than in many other countries in the world. And if we think of East Africa, for example, where we've seen fast economic growth in recent years. Countries growing at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%. I mean, in South Africa, we're lucky if we hit 1%. Those countries are growing at such a fast rate. Those growth rates will definitely slow down. We can see in East Africa that the regional integration there is driving growth within the East Africa community. So East African countries are beginning to be more dependent on each other, a little bit less dependent on the rest of the world. And that's going to help them tackle the worst challenges of this pandemic. Now, of course, not all of the regions in Africa are as integrated. So you can see, for example, in Southern Africa, West Africa, where you've got a few big dominant economies where they have a negative hit to their trade levels, the rest of the region suffers as well. I'm thinking about Nigeria and South Africa specifically, and then the smaller economies around them are facing lots of challenges. If we just think broadly at African countries, think of a few categories. If you are focused on exports of oil, for example, like Nigeria, like Angola, those kinds of countries, you will be hit by lower oil prices and lower demand for your products. And then you've got countries that are more dependent on tourist income. So some of the North African countries, Kenya, for example, Tanzania, South Africa, those will be negatively affected by a decline in tourists from North America and Europe. So while there is a little bit of good news for Africa in terms of we are not being hit as hard by this global pandemic, it's still not a great situation. And if we turn our side back to South Africa specifically, the outlook for South Africa is probably one of the worst on the continent. Our forecast is for the South African economy to shrink by about 9.5% this year, which is just a terrible number. And it's basically because we are a lot more integrated into the global economy than most other African countries in terms of investment and trade and tourism. But also, of course, our local infection rate, which at this stage is just rising at significant levels on a daily basis. So those are some of the reasons why if we have a little bit glimmer of hope for the African continent, there isn't that much enthusiasm about South Africa, where we are seeing really a big, big negative economic impact.
I think sort of as a follow-up to that, it certainly sounds like the African economy, like you said, has been sort of the decline is going to be less, you know, because of that lower rate of global integration. But I wanted to sort of check from you in terms of being susceptible to global shocks, South Africa specifically, are we at this moment, you know, given everything that's going on, are we more concerned with what's going on the continent? Are we going to, you know, perhaps benefit from that 3.5% decline, or will we suffer from the 3.5% decline, on the African continent? Is that going to affect us more or less than the 5% expected for the global economy? You know, I'm just wondering what has a bigger sway on us at this point. Is it what's going on the continent, because, you know, we are a big trading partner for many African countries, or are we more susceptible to what's going on globally because of the US, maybe China, Europe, etc.?
There's definitely some concern when you think of the health of the rest of the continent and how it impacts South Africa. We are a big trading partner for other African countries, but we need to remember that intra-Africa trade, in other words, trade between African countries, is very low when you think of other regions in the world. Only about 15%, 1/5, of Africa's imports and exports are to and from other African countries. So South Africa is more exposed to the rest of the world in terms of trade. Now, we immediately think of China, which is our number one trading partner. Now, their biggest downturn in this year hit about February and March, because we know the pandemic started in China. They got the biggest impact first, and they actually got a quicker turnaround than many other countries will probably have. But in case of South Africa, we export so much to China and we import so much from them. We are a lot more susceptible to shocks in China than the rest of Africa. Now, obviously, if we think of the African economy as being less negatively affected, then you can see maybe there are some opportunities for South African companies that suddenly can't do business with China anymore, or the United Kingdom, or France, or the USA. Maybe they can look at the rest of Africa. Now, Africa has always been said as a really big opportunity for South African companies. We're at the southern tip of the continent, and when you move north into our neighboring countries and beyond that, there are growing economies, growing middle classes, growing consumer bases. I think the one disappointing element in this kind of a narrative is that the planned Africa Free Trade Area, which was supposed to start in July this year, has been delayed to January. We saw that announced about 2 months ago, where African governments basically stopped talking and negotiating about this agreement and the implementation thereof because they had to focus on elements at home. So if this was implemented from July, we would have seen a lot more doors and border controls open up. That's unfortunately not yet the case. So maybe it's something to consider for the year ahead. But still, I mean, there are so many opportunities in Africa. The impact on the African continent and the countries in general will be less than we would see in Europe and Asia, for example. So South African companies that suddenly see a disruption to their normal activities, to where they export and where they import from, they should probably look beyond Europe and Asia if they haven't already, because African countries will probably see a smaller impact from what's going on in the world right now, and they'll probably get back on their feet quicker than you see in some other regions in the world. So for me, Africa remains attractive, even in this crazy, crazy world that we are living in now, where it appears that all the rules are changing, all the forecasts are changing. It is something that South African companies need to keep in mind, especially considering the negative impact on our local economy and how their markets could shrink in South Africa.
Okay. I think my last point just on these PMIs, I'm just looking at this graph. And it just seems like, you know, South Africa sort of playing in the same region, sort of between December and June, sort of in line. You see big points of decline, the lowest point being in April and stuff like that. But it seems in terms of where we are by the time June comes around, Ghana's doing somewhat better than, you know, the global averages and what's going on in other countries. Do you perhaps have some insight about what they're doing right?
Well, yeah, I mean, each country is obviously different. The survey methodology is the same across most countries, but every country has its own unique situation and every unique conditions. So what we've seen in some of the African countries that are actually doing well, you've mentioned Ghana. We know that Uganda is also doing well in terms of bouncing back from that April downturn. It's a case of companies looking forward to the next 12 months, for example, and thinking about what their businesses will look like. So in the case of Ghana, where we have a lot less in terms of infection rates and a lot less in terms of expectations about lockdown, we see companies looking ahead with much more optimism. And we're seeing this in some of the countries worldwide where the pandemic has sort of taken a turn and things are looking better and health systems are improving. The economic outlook is looking better. So it all depends on what exactly is happening in each country. But part of these PMI indices, there's a forward-looking component where they ask the companies, so what do you think your company and your environment will look like in 12 months from now? And we've seen actually a bit of a divergence there in terms of the 12-month outlook. So you've seen quite a few countries that are positive about it, and you've also seen quite a few that are not positive about it. So in the case of South Africa, we know that there is a bit of a pessimism going on. Are we really going to be in a much better situation 12 months from now? The other two that jump out for me is Zambia, for example, and also Nigeria. And there's a little bit of concern about Kenya as well. So that's what the individual surveys are telling us. I think it's quite understandable at this stage, in the middle of 2020, that there is some uncertainty, there is some divergence. We cannot expect all countries to bounce back at the same pace and in the same direction. So we saw most of the African PMIs drop significantly in March and April. We saw some recovery in May and June, but they're not all going in the same direction. We can't expect all of the countries on the continent to turn around at the same speed. We've seen different speeds in, for example, China, United Kingdom, France, Germany, those countries as well. So that's just, I guess, the next step of dealing with the situation. We were all hit with this bad news in March and April. We all looked a little bit better in May and June, but now it's going to be interesting to watch towards maybe the end of this year, how some countries improve and how some countries, their private sectors see a much better situation in 2021. While other countries will sort of be languishing a bit at the lower end of the range of where these indices are and not exactly knowing where we're going yet. If we again take South Africa as an example, there's talk about maybe going back to a lockdown level 4 in one or two of the provinces. There's uncertainty about exactly how companies can operate, capacity they're working at. So it's understandable that you'll have some countries where there's just not a clear direction yet about where companies are going to be in 12 months from now.
So in terms of the opening up in South Africa, what other data points have you been paying attention to sort of give you just a pulse, a reading of where the South African economy is?
Yes. So as I indicated earlier, we've seen a slowdown in economic data. And it's seen globally. It's not just a South African phenomenon. But for us, the most important at this stage is to be able to understand what happened in April, May, and June. So those were the most severe lockdown months. And some of the data that we have available would be on exports and imports. We know vehicle sales looked very bad. We've got some data on government tax revenues, and all of the numbers that we do have for April and May look very pessimistic. Sort of when you do calculations comparing the month to the same month last year, you see imports, for example, drop by almost 50% in April compared to the same month last year. In May, it was about 20%. So it's significantly fewer imports. And we are a country that we are dependent on imports of goods, like consumer goods, vehicles, food products, those kinds of items. Our exports declined significantly as shipping stopped, as other economies that usually buy our goods, they are buying fewer items. Vehicle sales came to almost complete stop in April. In May, they were still down by about 70% compared to the same month last year. Even as recently as June, where retail was open and vehicle sales were ready and going, we saw vehicle sales fall by 30% compared to June last year. Now, I guess it's understandable that these data points that we do have available are looking so bad because our economy has taken a significant hit. We've just entered the third quarter of the year. We're still trying to figure out what happened in the second quarter. But if you think of what happened to the economy, it is very possible that in the second quarter, GDP declined by 20 or 30% simply because we were locked down, companies were not operating, and the people were not at their jobs. And when you think of that kind of thing, it's understandable when you look at government data and they say, well, the total government revenues declined by 30% in May. That's a significant number. And I mean, it sets a very sad outlook for June and July, for example. So those are some of the data points that we do have available. These numbers obviously feed into the way we try and model and forecast what's going on in South Africa at the moment. And I know one of your previous economist guests, she indicated the challenge in trying to forecast and model what's going on. And the simplest way to just explain it is this is a once in a century type event. and the plans that you have in terms of forecasting and using statistical analysis to understand what's going on in the economy, the rules that you use, they are just not suited to the current situation where the world is experiencing something that we haven't seen in a century. And the tools that we have, well-intended and maybe theoretically sound, they're just not yet fixed and they're just not in the right place yet. So that's why we are so hungry for these data points to come out. And Stats SA has been increasing the speed of its data points coming out. We saw this week that we got new manufacturing production data, which obviously for April also looked quite terrible. But we are seeing these numbers coming through, and then we can test and validate the kind of observations that we've made for the second quarter to try and better understand where the economy is going.
At the risk of sounding as if I'm wearing a tinfoil hat, I would actually wager that by the time we put the lid on COVID-19, at least from an economics point of view, some of the data points that would have traditionally been relied on will no longer be as relevant, and that this thing is actually forcing economists and other analysts to actually find new ways of actually capturing what's actually going on, and actually perhaps even have maybe faster or quicker data points, you know, that are coming out either on a daily basis or on a weekly, maybe monthly basis in some cases. But I really think that faster stream of economic data, because it's tended to be, you know, backward looking and, you know, over time, etc. But I think it's actually going to force us to get into a new sort of paradigm around that. But the other one I wanted to check in with you is the Reserve Bank's bond purchasing program. This has been done as part of, you know, the Reserve Bank's tools to actually help the economy, you know, sort of spur on things and keep things going. How are you seeing the that space evolving?
Yes, the Reserve Bank has obviously done a lot to help support our economy and our banking and our financial system. Just as the government is doing things on the fiscal side, the Reserve Bank is jumping in on the monetary side. So we've seen a significant cut in interest rates. We've seen them provide guarantees and support to the banking system. And one of the other things that they're doing is they're actually getting involved in bonds buying. Now, we need to just be clear that this is, as we call it, on the secondary market, not the primary market where the government sells its bonds. So it's not the Reserve Bank buying bonds directly from the government, because then you've got the risk of an official entity like the Reserve Bank financing the government. And we don't want to do that. And the quickest way to say why not is we look at examples like Zimbabwe, Venezuela, Greece, Argentina, those kinds of countries that have in the past had significant crises, and where central banks get involved in financing the government, not a great idea. What the Reserve Bank is doing in this case is it's buying bonds in the secondary market where literally anyone can buy bonds. So it's institutional investors, insurance companies, pension funds, even you and I, we can directly go buy a bond there. And the reason why the Reserve Bank is getting involved there is because with the financial market shock of this COVID-19 situation, we've seen investment trends change significantly and quickly. And what happened in the bond market in South Africa and many other emerging markets, there's been a significant decline in demand for bonds. And then that makes the pricing and the interest rates and all those things completely jump around, lots of volatility, it goes a bit haywire. So the Reserve Bank got involved in this market to stabilize the volatility. You always want low volatility when it comes to these things. You want predictability, you want enough liquidity, and that's what the Reserve Bank did. It climbed into the bond market and made some purchases. Now, to be fair, the amount that they spent, quite a few billion rands, is actually small compared to the overall trading volume. So it's not like they directed the market or changed pricing and interest rates significantly. They just lended a hand to help this market function better. I almost want to compare it to when you've got a vehicle and one of its wheels are squeaking, you add a bit of oil, you turn a few nuts and bolts, you just make sure that it runs more smoothly. And that's what they did. It's something that we haven't really seen in South Africa before. We've seen it overseas, especially in some of the developed economies, and especially in the previous global financial crisis, 2008 and 2009. But it is an extraordinary step in South Africa. It is also something that the Reserve Bank has said, listen, we're going to do this now, but we're not going to continue for a long time with it. It's not something that is going to be part of monetary policy for the long term. So overall, I'm quite happy with the way they've approached it. It's a way of helping the markets function more effectively. It's temporary, and that's the most important thing with COVID policy intervention. It needs to be very targeted, very direct, but also temporary, because this too shall pass in the end. So I'm happy with the Reserve Bank coming out and being transparent with how much they are buying, when they did this, and also with the plan of eventually rolling it back. Because in the end, what they're doing now is just helping out a bit. It shouldn't be part of their job to do this on a continued basis. And I'm quite confident that our Reserve Bank, with its track record of monetary management and its independence and the sound ideas and minds and theories that it uses, it's going to get out of this pretty soon, I think, which is the best thing to do. And after that, hopefully, as things improve in the global economy and financial markets improve again, the functioning of these bonds markets can sort of get back to normal, whatever the new normal might be.
Whatever the new normal might be. Dr. Christie, just on a last point for this discussion, what are you actually hopeful about? It sounds like, just from your, last comments, you're hopeful about, saying things like this too shall pass, and the way that the Reserve Bank has actually handled the crisis. It sounds like you're positive about that. But just on an outlook point of view, because we always talk doom and gloom around the economy, and it is a bad time around the world, but what are you actually hopeful for?
Yes, I mean, there's so much doom and gloom at this stage. And if you look at some of the economic forecasts for this year, some of them are really dismal. Any color you affix to it, red and orange and deep purple, all of those colors are quite negative. At PwC, we are at the moment trying to look ahead at more of a rethinking, repairing, reconfigure, all of those things of there is a future after this. We need to prepare now because that future is coming. We don't know what it looks like yet. Sometimes people talk about when things get back to normal. Things will never be back to the normal as we knew it. So if I think of myself, I'm working remotely from home. I've been doing so for quite a few months, and I'll do so still for quite a few months ahead. I'm not sure in big corporate service entities how the new normal will look, not just in companies, but the economy in general. So the positive things I see at this stage is there's an increased awareness that things will never really get back to where we were. And we've done one or two surveys among some of the corporate leaders in South Africa and Africa in general about what they think they should do or could do or what they have done to get themselves ready for this new situation. And one of the things that we see a big focus on is the idea that innovation can get South African companies to a better situation where we will have to offer new products and services. We've seen people under this lockdown, we've seen a proliferation of delivery, for example, delivery of retail goods, food services, those kinds of things, where we've never seen the volume of deliveries to homes at this stage. We've never seen it before. It could continue for a long, long time. It could change drastically in 2021, for example, if we get to a situation where we're completely out of lockdown and the South African society is back to a situation that we would probably call normal. But we don't know yet. So innovation and technology is going to be one of the key drivers and answers to how we operate differently in this new world. So where previously you always had meetings in person, now you do them via a computer and a video screen via your phone. We're using these technologies to think of how the world can change. So not only do we have to cope, but there's these opportunities, opportunities that we know of, even ones that we haven't even thought of. If we think back 12 months ago, to the middle of 2019, and we were to tell each other that we would, in the middle of 2020, be sitting at home, working from home, those of us lucky enough to be able to work remotely, and not going to shops necessarily anymore, having things delivered to your house. Now, this is obviously only a segment of society. A big part of South Africa is unable to benefit from those kinds of things. But if we look at where the economic data is and the new trends and the new developments, how companies are using innovation to service clients across the income spectrum, it's just a completely different world. And we're adapting. We are slowly adapting, in other cases, quickly adapting. And that gives me some enthusiasm because, I mean, as a country, we are full of great minds, great thinkers, great leaders, innovative people, creative people. Out of necessity, we have been able to create many great things in this economy. And I think going forward, we can show each other that it's something that we can continue doing. And who knows, we could see innovations coming out of South Africa that can again help change the world. Out of necessity, we're being forced to be creative, to be innovative, but that's how you get the best out of people. When it's challenging times, these innovations can take us a long way.
So that's Dr. Christy Filyun, who is an economist at PwC. He's just talking about the fact that the Purchasing Managers Index numbers have been coming out all across the continent in South Africa and other countries, letting us know about what that actually means and the fact that these are a lot of people that are looking at things currently and sort of the frontline economic players looking at where the economy is going. And at the moment, South Africa seems to be playing around, quote unquote, middle of the pack. But you've got countries on the African continent that looking like they are going to have, a brighter outlook. He's also just talking about the fact that in terms of the decline in the global economy, they have that one set at a negative 5%. But for Africa, the decline might only be negative 3.5%. Talking to the fact that there are lower cases on the continent generally and less global integration that will affect these economies in terms of being susceptible, unlike South Africa, which is more integrated, and that decline is going to be greater than a negative 9%. Just ending off talking about the fact that he is hopeful about the innovation that's actually going to be forced by this time. Just talking about the fact that we've already seen businesses adapting and that everything just seems ripe for what's going to be a new normal and that we're unlikely to go back to the way that things were. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. That was Dr. Christy Filyun, like I said, an economist at PwC.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Yet another fascinating discussion with a great economic mind. One of the things that, is actually just cementing in my head is just the fact that, like I said previously, this is going to force, a fundamental shift in the way that economic data is gathered, presented, and sort of taken, because, economics has tended to be sort of like accounting, because most of the time in accounting, you are backward looking, for the last 6 months, for, the last quarter, the last year, and the like, to sort of get a sense of what's going on in a particular business or an organization. And the same can be said about the economy, especially in the macro sense, where you're looking at the performance of a country's GDP quarter on quarter, year on year, things like that. But I think this period is going to really fundamentally change the way in which data points are actually found and what data points are actually being paid attention to and how the data is gathered. The other big shift for me personally is just the fact that I've spoken, time and time again about a more compassionate form of economics, and once again, you know, this crisis is likely going to be a big catalyst for driving change in the way that the economy is set up, in the way that the society is set up. And hopefully it will be something that drives a little bit more equitable distribution of wealth and income in the society, because people will be forced to rethink how they operate certain things, because there are a lot of jobs that have tended to be seen as being, you know, perhaps lower income and things like that. But during the process and the period of lockdown, for example, those have become your quote-unquote frontline workers, your essential workers. So, you know, as time progresses, you sort of hope that there will be a reconfiguring where, you know, some of those roles become perhaps higher paid, more appreciated by the economy, because all of it just has to do with a certain level of perception in the economy one way or the other. Just the other one is that when it comes to, you know, things like pandemics and some of these global situations, these are the times and moments that shape a future. I mean, if you just think about what's happened in the last maybe 100, 150 years, it's moments where you have the light bulb. It's moments where you have World War One, World War Two, you know, things like that, where you switch from the gold standard to just pure fiat currencies. These moments, it's a time where things will never be the same again. And I'm quite excited to see what the economy will be looking like in the next 2 years. So that brings us to the end of this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.